8. Fallen God. Loken could scarcely remember a fight where he and his warriors had expended all their ammunition. Each Astartes carried enough shells to sustain them for most types of engagement, since no shot was wasted, and each target would normally fall to a single bolt. The ammo hoppers were back at the drop site, and there was no way they could get through to them. The War Master's resolute advance had seen to that. Loken's full capacity of bolter rounds had long been expended, and he was thankful for Axeman's insistence on subsonic rounds, as they made satisfyingly lethal explosions within the bodies of the dead things.
"Thrown! Don't they ever stop?" gasped Horgadon. "I must have killed 100 or more of the damned things."
"You probably keep killing the same one," replied Loken, shaking his sword free of grey matter. "If you don't destroy the head, they get back up again. I've cut down half a dozen or more with bolter wounds in them."
Torgadon nodded and said,
"Hold on, the Legio's coming again."
Loken gripped onto a more solid piece of debris as the Titans began yet another deadly strafing run through the mass of rotted monsters. Like the monstrous giants said to haunt the mists of Barbarus, the Titans emerged from the fog with fists of thunder and fire. Wet explosions mushroomed from the swamp as high explosives hurled the cadavers into the air, and the crashing steps of the mighty war machines crushed them to ooze beneath their hammer-blow footsteps. The very air thrummed with the vibrations of the Titans' attack. Avalanches of debris and mud sliding from the glory of terror with each explosion and titanic footstep. The dead things had gained the slopes of rubble and detritus that led into the starship 3 times. And 3 times they had sent them back, first with gunfire, and, when the ammunition had run out, with blades and brute strength. Each time they killed hundreds of their enemies, but each time a handful of Astartes were dragged down and pulled beneath the waters of the swamp. Under normal circumstances, the Astartes would have had no trouble in dealing with these abominations, but with the War Master's fate unknown, they were brittle and on edge, unable to think or fight with their customary ferocity. Loken knew exactly what they were feeling, because he felt it too. Unable to raise the War Master, Axemand, or Abaddon, the warriors outside the hulk were left paralyzed and in disarray without their beloved leader.
"Timber," said the War Master,
rising to his feet and marching towards his erstwhile planetary governor. With each step, he saw further evidence of Eugen Temba's treachery, clotted blood on the edge of his sword, and a fierce grin of anticipation. Where once had been the loyal and upright follower, Horus now saw only a filthy traitor who deserved the most painful of deaths. A fell light grew around Temba, further revealing the corruption of his flesh. And Horus knew that nothing of his former friend was left in the diseased shell that stood before him. Horus wondered if this was what Loken had experienced beneath the mountains of 6319. The horror of a former comrade succumbing to the warp. Horus had known of the bad blood between Jubal and Loken, now understanding that such enmity, however trivial, had been the chink in Jubal's armor by which the warp had taken him. What flaw had been Temba's undoing? Pride? Ambition? Jealousy? The bloated monster that had once been Eugen Temba looked up from the corpse of Varulam Moy and smiled, thoroughly pleased with its work.
"War Master," said Temba,
each syllable glottal and wet, as though spoken through water.
"Do not dare to address me by such a title, abomination." "Abomination," hissed Temba, shaking his head. "Don't you recognize me?"
"No," said Horus. "You're not Temba. You're warp-spawned filth, and I'm here to kill you."
"You are wrong, War Master," it laughed. "I am Temba, the so-called friend you left behind. I am Temba, the loyal follower of Horus you left to rot on this backwater world while you went on to glory."
Horus approached the dais of the captain's throne and dragged his eyes from Temba to the body of Varulam Moy. Blood streamed from a terrible wound in his side, pumping energetically onto the stained floor of the bridge. The flesh of his throat was purple and black, a lump of broken bone pushing at the bruised skin where his neck had been snapped.
"A pity about Moy,"
said Temba.
He would have been a fine convert.
Don't say his name, warned Horus. You are not fit to give it voice.
If it consoles you, he was loyal until the end. I offered him a place at my side, with the power of Nergleth filling his veins with its immortal necrosis. But he refused. He felt the need to try to kill me. Foolish, really. The power of the warp fills me, and he had no chance at all. But that didn't stop him. Admirable loyalty, even if it was misplaced.
Horus placed a foot on the first step of the dais, his golden sword held out before him, his fury at this beast drowning out all other concerns. All he wanted to do was throttle the light from this treacherous bastard with his bare hands, but he retained enough sense to know that if Moy had been killed with such apparent ease, then he would be a fool to discard his weapon.
"We don't have to be enemies, Horus," said Temba. "You have no idea of the power of the warp, old friend. It is like nothing we ever saw before. It's beautiful, really."
"It is power," agreed Horus, climbing another step. "Elemental and uncontrollable, and therefore not to be trusted."
"Elemental, perhaps. But it is far more than that," said Temba. "It seethes with life, with ambition and desire. You think it's a wasteland of raging energy that you bend to your will, but you have no idea of the power that lies there, the power to dominate, to control, and to rule."
"I have no desire for such things," said Horus.
"You lie," giggled Temba. "I can see it in your eyes, old friend. Your ambition is a potent thing, Horus. Do not be afraid of it. Embrace it, and we will not be enemies. We will be allies, embarking upon a course that will see us masters of the galaxy."
"This galaxy already has a master, Temba. He is called the Emperor."
"Then where is he? He blundered across the cosmos in the manner of the barbarian tribes of ancient Terra, destroying anyone who would not submit to his will, and then left you to pick up the pieces. What manner of leader is that? He is but a tyrant by any other name."
Horus took another step, and was almost at the top of the dais, almost within striking distance of this traitor who dared to profane the name of the Emperor.
"Think about it, Horus," urged Temba. "The whole history of the galaxy has been the gradual realization that events do not happen in an arbitrary manner, but that they reflect an underlying destiny. That destiny is chaos."
"Chaos?"
"Yes,"
shouted Temba.
"Say it again, my friend. Chaos is the first power in the universe, and it will be the last. When the first ape creatures bashed each other's brains out with bones, or cried to the heavens in the death throes of plague, they fed and nurtured chaos, a blissful release of excess and the glee of intrigue. All is grist for the soul mills of chaos. So long as man endures, so too does chaos."
Horus reached the top of the dais and stood face to face with Temba, a man he had once counted as his friend and comrade in this great undertaking. Though the thing spoke with Temba's voice, and its stretched features were still those of his comrade, there was nothing left of that fine man, only this wretched creature of the warp.
"You have to die," said Horus. "No, for that is the glory of Nergleth,"
chuckled Temba.
"I will never die."
"We'll soon see about that," snarled Horus, and drove his sword into Temba's chest, the golden blade easily sliding through the layers of blubber towards the traitor's heart. Horus ripped his sword free in a wash of black blood and stinking pus, the stench almost too much for even him to bear.
Timber laughed, apparently untroubled by such a mortal wound, and brought up his own sword, its glinting fractured blade like patterned obsidian. He brought the blade to his blue lips and said,
"The War Master Horus."
With a speed that was unnatural in its swiftness, the tip of the blade speared for the War Master's throat. Horus threw up his sword, deflecting Temba's weapon barely a centimeter from his neck, and took a step backwards as the traitor lurched towards him. Recovering from the surprise attack, Horus gripped his sword two-handed, blocking every lethal thrust and cut that Temba made. Horus fought like never before, his every move to parry and defend. Eugen Temba had never been a swordsman, so where this sudden, horrifying skill came from, Horus had no idea. The two men traded blows back and forth across the command deck, the bloated form of Eugen Temba moving with a speed and dexterity quite beyond anything that should have been possible for someone of such vast bulk. Indeed, Horus had the distinct impression that it was not Temba's skill with a blade that he was up against, but the blade itself. He ducked beneath a decapitating strike and spun inside Temba's guard, slashing his sword through his opponent's belly, a thick gruel of infected blood and fat spilling onto the deck. The dark blade darted out and struck his shoulder guard, ripping it from his armor in a flash of purple sparks. Horus danced back from the blow as the return stroke arced towards his head. He dropped and rolled away as Temba turned his bloody, carven body back towards him. Any normal man would have died a dozen times or more, but Temba seemed untroubled by such killing wounds. Temba's face shone with glistening sweat, and Horus blinked as the monster's outline wavered, like those of the cyclopean monsters that he had fought in the ship's central spine. Frantic motions shimmered, and he could see something deep within the monstrously swollen body, the faint outline of a screaming man, his hands clasped to his ears and his face twisted in a rictus grin of horror. Trailing his innards like gooey ropes, Eugen Temba descended the steps of the dais like a socialite making her entrance at one of the American balls. Horus saw the cursed sword gleaming with a terrible hunger, its edges twitching in Temba's hand, as though aching to bury itself in his flesh.
"It doesn't have to end this way, Horus," gurgled Temba. "We need not be enemies."
"Yes," said Horus,
"we do. You killed my friend and you betrayed the Emperor. It can be no other way."
Even before the words were out of his mouth, the smoky gray blade streaked towards him, and Horus threw himself back as the razor-sharp edge grazed his breastplate and cut into the ceramite. Horus backed away from Temba, hearing twin cracks as the monstrously bloated traitor's ankle bones finally snapped under his weight. Horus watched as Temba dragged himself forwards unsteadily, the splintered ends of bone jutting from the bloody flesh of his ankles. No normal man could endure such agony, and Horus felt a flickering ember of compassion for his former friend stir within his breast. No man deserved to be abused so, and Horus vowed to end Temba's suffering, seeing again the jagged afterimage sputtering within the alien flesh of the warp.
"I should have listened to you, Eugen,"
he whispered. Temba didn't reply. The glimmering blade wove bright patterns in the air, but Horus ignored it, too seasoned a warrior to be caught by such an elementary trick. Once again, Temba's blade reached out for him, but Horus was now gaining a measure of its hunger to do him harm. It attacked without thought or reason, only the simple lust to destroy. He looped his own blade around the quillons of Temba's sword and swept his arm out at a disarming move before closing to deliver the death blow. Instead of releasing the blade for fear of a shattered wrist, however, Temba retained his grip on the sword, its tip twisting in the air and plunging towards Horus's shoulder. Both blades pierced flesh at the same instant, Horus's tearing through his foe's chest and into his heart and lungs, as Temba's stabbed into the muscle of Horus's shoulder where his armor had been torn away. Horus yelled in sudden pain, his arm burning with the shimmering sword's touch, and reacted with all the speed the Emperor had bred into him. His golden sword slashed out, severing Temba's arm just above the elbow, and the sword clanged to the deck where it twitched in the grip of the severed arm with a loathsome life of its own. Temba wavered and fell to his knees with a cry of agony, and Horus reared above his foe with his sword upraised. His shoulder ached and bled, but victory was now his, and he roared with anger as he stood ready to enact his vengeance. Through the red mist of anger and hurt, he saw the pathetic weeping and soiled form of Eugen Temba, stripped of the loathsome power of the warp that had claimed him. Still bloated and massive, the dark light in his eyes was gone, replaced by tears and pain as the enormity of his betrayal crashed down upon him.
"What have I done?"
asked Temba, his voice little more than a whisper. The anger went out of Horus in an instant, and he lowered his sword, kneeling beside the dying man that had once been his trusted friend. Juddering sobs of agony and remorse racked Temba's body, and he reached up with his remaining hand to grip the War Master's armor.
"Forgive me, my friend," he said. "I didn't know. None of us did."
"Hush now, Eugen," soothed Horus. "It was the warp. The tribes of the moon must have used it against you. They would have called it magic."
"No, I'm so sorry,"
wept Temba, his eyes dimming as death reached up to claim him.
"They showed us what it could do, and I saw the power of it. I saw beyond and into the warp. I saw the powers that dwell there, and, Emperor, forgive me, I still said yes to it."
"There are no powers that dwell there, Eugen," said Horus. "You are deceived."
"No,"
said Temba, gripping Horus's arm tightly.
"I was weak, and I fell willingly. But it is done with me now. There is great evil in the warp, and I need you to know the truth of chaos before the galaxy is condemned to the fate that awaits it."
"What are you talking about? What fate?"
"I saw it, War Master. The galaxy as a wasteland. The Emperor dead, and mankind in bondage to a nightmarish hell of bureaucracy and superstition. All is grim darkness, and all is war. Only you have the power to stop this future. You must be strong, War Master. Never forget that."
Horus wanted to ask more, but watched impotently as the spark of life fled Eugen Temba. His shoulder still burning with fire, Horus rose to his feet and marched over to the rewired consoles and the throbbing bundle of cables that reached up to the chamber's roof. With an aching cry of loss and anger, he severed the cables with one mighty blow of his sword. They flopped and spun like landed fish, sparks and green fluid spurting from internal tubes and cables, and Horus could tell that the damnable Vox transmission had ceased. Horus dropped his sword and, clutching his injured shoulder, sat on the deck next to Eugen Temba's dead body and wept for his lost friend. Loken hacked his sword through another corpse's neck, dropping the mouldering revenant to the ground as still more pressed in behind it. He and Torgadden fought back to back, their swords coated in the flesh of the dead things as they were pushed further and further up the slopes of metal that led inside the starship. Their warriors fought desperately, each blow leaden and exhausted. The titans of the Legio Mortis crushed what they could and sporadically raked the base of the rubble with sprays of gunfire, but there was no stopping the horde. Dozens of Astartes were dead, and there was still no word from the forces that had entered the glory of Terra. Garbled Vox transmissions from the Byzant Janizars seemed to indicate that they were finally moving forward, but no one could be sure as to where exactly they were moving. Loken fought with robotic movements, his every blow struck with mechanical regularity rather than skill. His armor was dented and torn in a dozen places, but still he fought for victory, despite the utter desperation of their cause. That was what Astartes did. They triumphed over insurmountable odds. Loken had lost track of how long they had been fighting, the brutal sensations of this combat having dulled his senses to all but his next attacker. "We'll have to pull back into the ship," he shouted. Torgadden and Nero Vipers nodded, too busy with their own immediate situations to respond verbally, and Loken turned and began issuing orders across the intersuit Vox, receiving acknowledgements from all his surviving squad commanders. He heard a cry of anger, and recognizing it as belonging to Torgadden, turned with his sword raised. A mob of stinking cadavers swamped the top of the slopes, overwhelming the Astartes gathered there in a frenzy of clawing hands and biting jaws. Torgadon was borne to the ground, and the mouths of the corpses fastened on his neck and arms were dragging him down.
No!
Shouted Loken, as he leapt towards the furious combat. His shoulder charged in amongst them, sending bodies flying down the slopes. His fists crushed skulls, and his sword hacked dead things in two. A gauntleted fist thrust up through grey flesh, and he grabbed it, feeling the weight of an armoured Astartes behind it.
Hold on, Taric! He ordered,
hauling on his friend's arm. Despite his strength, he couldn't free Torgadon, and felt grasping limbs envelop his legs and waist. He clubbed with his free hand, but he couldn't kill enough of them. Hands tore at his head, smearing blood across his visor, and blinding him as he felt himself falling. Loken thrashed in vain, breaking dead things apart, but unable to prevent himself and Torgadon from being pulled apart. Claws tore at his armor, the unnatural strength of their enemies piercing his flesh and drawing his precious blood. A grinning, skull-faced monster landed on his chest, face to face with him, and its jaws snapped shut on his visor. Unable to penetrate the armored glass, rivulets of muddy saliva blurred his vision as its jaws worked up and down. Loken head-butted the thing from his chest and rolled onto his front to gain some purchase. He lost his grip on his sword and bellowed in anger as he finally began to free himself from their intolerable grip. Loken fought with every ounce of his strength, finally gaining a respite and rising to his feet. All around him, warriors of the Astartes struggled with the dead things, and he knew that they were undone. Then, at a stroke, every one of the dead things dropped to the ground with a soft sigh of release. Where seconds before the area around the starship had been a furious battlefield of warriors locked in life-or-death struggles, now it was an eerily silent graveyard. Bewildered Astartes picked themselves up and looked around at the inert, lifeless bodies surrounding them. "What just happened?" asked Nero Vipers, disentangling himself from a pile of bludgeoned corpses. "Why have they stopped?" Loken shook his head. He had no answer to give him.
"I don't know, Nero.
It doesn't make any sense."
"You'd rather they got back up?"
"No. Don't be dense. I just meant that if someone was animating these things, then why stop now? They had us!"
Loken shuddered. For someone to wield a power that could defeat the Astartes was a sobering thought. All the time they had crusaded through the galaxy, there had been nothing that could stand against them for long. Eventually the enemy's will would break in the face of the overwhelming superiority of the Space Marines. Would this happen when they met a foe with a will as implacable as their own? Shaking himself free of such gloomy thoughts, he began issuing orders to dispose of the dead things, and they began hurling them from the wreckage, hacking or tearing heads from shoulders lest they reanimate. Eventually, Aximand and Abaddon led their warriors from the wreckage, battered and bloody from the ship's fall, but otherwise unharmed. Erebus too returned, his word-bearers similarly abused, but also largely unharmed. There was still no sign of Sedere's men or the War Master.
"We're going back in there for the War Master," said Abaddon. "I'll lead."
Loken was about to protest, but nodded as he saw the unshakable resolve in Ezekiel's face.
"We'll all go," he said.
They found Luke Sedere and his men trapped in one of the lower decks, hemmed in by fallen bulkheads and tons of debris. It took the better part of an hour to move enough of it to grant Luke's assaulters their freedom. On pulling Sedere from his prison, all he could say was,
"They were here. Monsters with one eye. Came out of nowhere. But we killed them. All of them. Now they're gone."
Luke had suffered casualties. Seven of his men were dead, and his perpetual grin was replaced by a vengeful expression that reminded Loken of a defiant young boy's. Black, stinking residue coated the walls, and Sedere had a haunted look to him that Loken did not like at all. It reminded him of Euphrati Keeler in the moments after the warp thing that had taken Jubal almost killed her. With Sedere and his warriors in tow, the Mornival pressed on, with Loken leading the way, finding signs of battle scattered throughout the ship, bolter impacts and sword cuts that led inexorably towards the ship's bridge.
"Loken," whispered Aximand, "I fear what we may find ahead. You should prepare yourself."
No, said Logan. I know what you are suggesting, but I won't think of that. I can't.
We have to be prepared for the worst.
No, said Logan, louder than he had intended. We would know if...
If what?
Asked Torgadon. If the War Master was dead, said Logan finally.
Thick silence enveloped them as they struggled to come to terms with such a hideous idea.
Logan's right, said Abaddon. We would know if the War Master was dead. You know we would. You of all of us would feel it, little Horace.
I hope you're right, Ezekiel.
Enough of this damned misery, said Torgadon. All this talk of death, and we haven't found hide nor hair of the War Master yet. Save your gloomy thoughts for the dead that we already know about. Besides, we all know that if the War Master was dead, the sky would have fallen, eh?
That lightened their mood a little, and they pressed on, making their way along the central spine of the ship, passing through juddering bulkheads and along corridors with flickering lights, until they reached the blast doors that led to the bridge. Loken and Abaddon led the way, with Aximen, Torgadon, and Sedire bringing up the rear. Inside it was almost dark, only a soft light from ruptured consoles providing any illumination. The War Master sat with his back to them, his glorious plate armor dented and filthy, cradling something vast and bloated in his lap. Logan drew level with the War Master, grimacing as he saw a grotesquely swollen human head in his commander's lap. A great puncture wound pierced the War Master's breastplate, and a bloody stab wound on his shoulder leaked blood down the armor of his arm.
Sir, said Logan, are you all right?
The War Master didn't answer, instead cradling the head of what Logan could only assume was Eugen Tember. His bulk was immense, and Logan wondered how such a monstrously fat creature could possibly have moved under his own strength. The Mournival joined Logan, shocked and horrified at the War Master's appearance, and at this terrible place. They looked at one another with a growing unease, none quite knowing what to make of this bizarre scene.
Sir,
said Aximand, kneeling before the weeping War Master.
I failed him,
said Horace.
I failed them all. I should have listened, but I didn't. And now they're all dead. It's too much.
Sir, we're going to get you out of here. The dead things have stopped attacking. We don't know how long that's going to last, so we need to get out of this place and regroup.
Horace shook his head slowly.
They won't be attacking again. Tember's dead, and I cut the Vox signal. I don't know how exactly, but I think it was part of what was animating those poor souls.
Abaddon pulled Logan aside and hissed.
We need to get him out of here, and we can't let anyone see the state he's in.
Logan knew that Abaddon was right. To see the War Master like this would break the spirit of every Astartes who saw him. The War Master was an invincible god of war, a towering figure of legend that could never be brought low. To see him humbled so would be a blow to morale that the 63rd Expedition might never recover from. Gently, they prized Eugen Tember's massive body away from the War Master and lifted their commander to his feet. Logan slung the War Master's arm over his shoulder, feeling a warm wetness against his face from the blood that still dripped from Horace's arm. Between them, he and Abaddon walked the War Master from the bridge.
Wait, said the War Master, his voice weak and low. I'll walk out of this place on my own.
Reluctantly, they let him go, and though he swayed a little, the War Master kept his feet, despite the ashen pallor of his face and the obvious pain he was in. The War Master spared a last look at Eugen Tember and said,
Gather up Verulam. And let's get out of here, my sons.
Maggard slumped against the steel bulkhead of the Glory of Terror, his sword covered in black fluids from the dead things. Petronella fought to hold back tears at the thought of how close they had all come to death on this bleak, emperor-forsaken moon. Sheltered behind the bulkhead where Maggard had thrust her, she had heard rather than seen the desperate conflict that raged outside. The war cries, the sound of motorized blades tearing into wet meat, the percussive booms and explosive flashes of light from the Titan's weapons. Her imagination filled in the blanks, and though a gut-loosening terror filled her from head to toe, she pictured glorious combats and heroic duels between the towering Astartes giants and the corrupt foes that sought their destruction. Her breathing came in short, convulsive gasps, as she realized she had just survived her first battle. But with that realization came a strange calm. Her limbs stopped shaking, and she wanted to smile and laugh. She wiped her hand across her eyes, smearing the coal that lined them across her cheeks like tribal war paint. Petronella looked over at Maggard, seeing him now for the great warrior he truly was, barbaric and bloody, and magnificent. She pushed herself to her feet and leaned out beyond her sheltering bulkhead to look at the battlefield below. It was like a scene from one of Keelan Roger's landscapes, and the sublime vision took her breath away. The fog and mist had lifted, and the sun was already breaking through to bathe the landscape in its ruddy red glow. The pools of swamp water glittered like shards of broken glass spread across the landscape. The three magnificent titans of the Legio Mortis watched over squads of Astartes, armed with flamers, putting the corpses of the dead things to the torch, and pyres of the fallen monsters burned with a blue-green light. She was already forming the metaphors and imagery she would use, the Emperor's warriors taking his light into the dark places of the galaxy, or perhaps that the Astartes were his angels of death, bringing his retribution to the unrighteous. The words had the right epic tone, but she sensed that such imagery still lacked some fundamental truth, sounding more like propaganda slogans than anything else. This was what the Great Crusade was all about, and the fear of the last few hours was washed away in a swelling wave of admiration for the Astartes and the men and women of the 63rd Expedition. She turned as she heard heavy footfalls. The officers of the Mournival were marching towards her, a plate-armored body borne upon their shoulders, and the levity she had witnessed in them earlier now utterly absent. Each one's face, even the Joker Torgadon's, was serious and grim. The cloaked figure of the War Master himself followed behind them, and she was shocked rigid at his beaten appearance. His armor was torn and gashed with foulness, and blood spatters matted his face and arm.
"What happened?"
she asked as Captain Loken passed her.
"Whose body is that?"
"Be silent," he snapped, "and be gone."
"No," said the War Master. "She is my documentarist, and if that is to mean anything, then she must see us at our worst, as well as our best."
"Sir," began Abaddon, but Horus cut him off. "I'll not be argued with on this, Ezekiel. She comes with us."
Petronella felt her heart leap at this inclusion, and fell into step with the War Master's party as they began their descent to the ground.
"The body is that of Verulam Moy, captain of my 19th company," said Horus, his voice weary and filled with pain. "He fell in the line of duty, and will be honored as such."
"You have my deepest sorrows, my lord,"
said Petronella, her heart aching to see the War Master in such pain.
"Was it Jugendtember?"
she asked, fishing out her data slate and Nemo quill.
"Did he kill Captain Moy?"
Horus nodded, too weary even to answer her.
"And Tember is dead? You killed him?"
"Jugendtember is dead," answered Horus. "I think he died a long time ago. I don't know exactly what I killed in there, but it wasn't him."
"I don't understand."
"I'm not sure I do either,"
said Horus, stumbling as he reached the bottom of the slope of debris. She reached out a hand to steady him, before realizing what a ridiculous idea that was. Her hand came away bloody and wet, and she saw that the War Master still bled from a wound in his shoulder.
"I ended the life of Jugendtember, but damn me if I didn't weep for him afterwards."
"But wasn't he an enemy?"
"I have no trouble with my enemies, Miss Fivar," said Horus. "I can take care of my enemies in a fight. But my so-called allies, my damned allies, they're the ones who keep me walking the floors at night."
Legion apothecaries made their way towards the War Master as she tried to make sense of what he was saying. She allowed the Nemo quill to inscribe his words anyway. She saw the look she was getting from the Mournival, but ignored them.
Did you speak to him before you slew him? What did he say?
He said that only I had the power to stop the future,
said the War Master, his voice suddenly faint and echoing as though coming from the other end of a long tunnel. Puzzled, she looked up in time to see the War Master's eyes roll back in their sockets and his legs buckle beneath him. She screamed, reaching out with her hand towards him, knowing that she was powerless to help him, but needing to try to prevent his fall. Like a slow-moving avalanche or a mountain toppling, the War Master collapsed. The Nemo Quill scratched at the data slate, and she wept as she read the words there.
I was there the day that Horus fell.